Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Seeking Alpha, Alpha Talks Editors Roundtable, what moved the markets this week, the week ending Friday, July 17th, 2020. I am joined by the usual brain trust of Seeking Alpha editors, starting with Aaron Task, the VP contributor of content, Bradley Olison, VP of news, and Stephen Alpher, managing editor of breaking news. I'm Nathaniel Baker, host and contributing editor here at Seeking Alpha. Okay, it was a pretty eventful week, an interesting week. We had risk on appetite at the beginning of the week, and now in the last couple of days, this appears to have faded a little bit. Disappointing week for tech, strangely enough. Bank earnings kicked off earnings season and were mostly positive, with a lot of profitable stuff coming from the trading divisions of these investment banks. We had some negative stuff on COVID again, but also some positive stuff on the vaccine front. So add it all up, and I think we're still up here as we record this on Friday, up for the week. But there's a lot for us to unpack, so let's start with Aaron. Aaron, what do you make of all this?
Right. Well, it was an interesting week where there weren't huge moves in the market. I mean, for the S&P 500, it seems to me like we're in a trading range with around 3,000 at the bottom end, and the June 8th highs of 3225, give or take, at the high end. We're touching that as we're talking right now. We hit it again on Monday. Monday was an interesting day. You know, we started the day with, you know, it was huge risk on type trade. Tesla was going bananas to the upside, and then they had the big sell off into the close. So you're seeing a lot of chop within that trading range, whether it breaks out to the upside or back down below. It seems like the bulls are still in charge, you know, that there's more action to the upside than there is to the downside. And I think the volume probably suggests that. But, you know, you did touch on some of the strength in the financials and some of the weakness in the big cap tech stocks. And obviously Netflix, we're seeing that here today, real big weakness. But notably, the Nasdaq underperforming this week for the first time in several months, really. And there is now the chatter that, you know, there's a rollover in the big cap, mega cap tech stocks. They just got too far, overstretched. That remains to be seen. There were a lot of cross currents happening in the market, which overall didn't move a whole lot this week. It feels, and now today, Friday, feels a little bit like it's summertime.
Normalcy. A little bit, although something that is quite abnormal, I would say, is Microsoft today saying that they are cutting jobs. Why does Microsoft need to cut jobs? I thought these guys were just printing money. They have no debt. But anyway, so that stock is sold off along with all the other tech names. Bradley, take us through some of this a little bit. Who are some of the winners and losers?
We talked about big tech a bunch last week leading it, and to some extent, they're still the story, even though they didn't outperform necessarily the same way that they have in the past. Notably, Barry Ritholtz shared an image earlier this week that they are almost entirely responsible for all of the gains that we've seen. If you strip out Zoom, Tesla, Amazon, Netflix, you're left with an S&P that was down close to 7%. And I saw an interesting comment from Sentiment Trader as well, that more than 60% of the S&P companies are still in correction territory, down 10% from their highs. So, you know, I think it's tempting to get excited when you see where the S&P is trading, but, you know, you do have to look a little bit beneath the surface. And to the point about the earlier tech sell-off this week, when we had the reversal, it was off the back of, I believe it was related to the California rollback, when they shut down. Right. Or try to revert back to some of these more stringent measures. And whenever I see those kinds of moves, the first thing that jumps out at me is, you know, which companies are actually leading some of the sell-off. And to me, a lot of them were the high multiple tech names. And we like to talk about the FANG names, but to me it was Salesforce.com. You know, they sold off and they still haven't recovered, mind you, even all the way through the rest of the week. They're trading at 9x sales. Paycom's still trading at 21x sales, even though they sold off a ton on Monday. Fortinet, which is a cybersecurity name, but also a high multiple company. They were hit with a valuation downgrade to boot this week. And you also have Adobe and PayPal, which also led a lot of them the downside on Monday. And whenever that happens, first thing I think is, where's that money going to go, right? Are we rotating somewhere? And looking at the worst performers over the past 52 weeks, these are all names that are down 40%. Most of those names were the ones who were outperforming with double-digit gains this week. So that's what were the most that kind of jumped out at me. And I think lost in a lot of the shuffle is small caps. The IWM ETF, which is tracks the Russell 2000, outpaced the S&P by 2-1. So definitely some rotation that I saw off the back of that Monday sell-off. I think it was just a bit jarring for some people. I don't know what hay can be made from that, but that was just some of the things that I found interesting.
Yeah, and look, there's been a ton of profits in these tech names. You talk about Netflix, NFLX, up 63%, 6.3 this year, I just looked. So a little bit of selling after a disappointing earnings report is maybe not all that much to be concerned about, at least for the big picture. Stephen, what's your take? What was all the corporate news? We've touched on some of it so far. What else was going on?
Yeah, well, you did touch on bank earnings, which we saw this week from all the big, from at least the mega cap money center banks. And the Fed's done it again, right? They their actions led to major windfall in profits for at least the banks that have significant trading and investment banking operations. We can kind of leave Wells Fargo, maybe Bank of America out of that. Certainly Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, Citigroup raked it in. Bloomberg estimated roughly about a $10 billion windfall by basing kind of what they tend to make in fixed income trading and debt underwriting in Q2 in past years is normally about $10 billion. This year in Q2, it was about $20 billion. So, and there's been a clear, if you look at kind of how the stocks have, we talk about how the banks have done this year and it's not been good. But Morgan Stanley is green for the year now. Goldman Sachs is right behind them. And then you look at more of the kind of a consumer commercial focused lender like Wells Fargo and they're down significantly. So there's kind of this dichotomy within the banking sector.
Steve makes a great point. I just wanted to touch on that you're starting to see, people making distinctions even within industry sectors. I mean, it seemed for a while there we were in a market where it was either risk on, risk off, stay at home, or back to work, work from home or back to work trades were working. And now, I think, again, not that we're back to normalcy, but we're getting back to an environment where people are making distinctions on an individual stock basis as opposed to looking at the market as a monolith or sectors as monolithic. And I think that's ultimately healthy. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, again, the banks are a great example. I mean, Morgan Stanley, it wasn't just an all-time, a record revenue quarter for them. It beat the prior record by something like 20%. Mm-hmm. Right. And on the flip side, Wells Fargo, they slashed their dividend. PNC also, giving some cautious guidance as well. So, we're a long way from normal, but, I think that's a healthier environment than just everyone rushing to in and out of one trade indiscriminately, which we did see for several months.
And I think, Steve, you saw some quote from Jamie Dimon, right, that described some of that relationship. Even though the capital markets revenue is off the charts, there's something under the surface that is a little more sinister.
Yeah, and Jamie Dimon, and even more explicitly from the head of PNC, who's Bill Demchak, who, they're kind of at a loss for what's happening. He said, this is like, we're in this depression where massive folks are out of work, but they're actually seeing consumer deposit balances on the rise. And he's searching back through his memory, he can't find anything like that. What's clear, clearly what happened is the stimulus package, the extra money in the unemployment checks did its job as far as kind of keeping consumers spending. Kind of next thing we have to look forward to is a so-called fiscal cliff, when a lot of that stuff's running out very soon, at the end of this month, a lot of it. So there's either going to have to be another package, or some of this the fact that people aren't working or not making as much as they used to is really going to start to bite the economy.
Yeah, and that's what people are looking out for now, of course. This takes us to the next segment where we talk about our favorite articles, news stories, sometimes tweets, and other things that we have seen and covered and edited or perhaps even written during the week. Why don't we start with Bradley?
So again, I think I'm going to go with a thematic story rather than any sort of singular item, because many of these stories were among the most read. And, you know, I'll give you a little hint. It involves electric vehicles. Mm. And, you know, we can talk about Tesla. We talk about Tesla, I feel like, every single week. But notably, they did breach the $1,500 level last Friday. They were only at $1,000 a share at June end. That is extraordinary. This week, we saw them rise briefly near $1,800. But then we're back down to $1,500 a share. To me, it seems like there is a little bit of consolidation there. I hate to say it. I don't want to go on the record as saying Tesla has stopped rising exponentially.
Timestamp.
I think that's
official.
Dangerous.
Brad's calling the top.
Definitely dangerous, but it does seem like there's this natural magnetism towards that level. I thought, interestingly, Piper Sandler this week raised their price target on Tesla to over $2,300, I believe.
Yeah.
And that prompted a response from the CEO Musk himself. Three letters. Wow. and so I guess when you have the CEO expressing some incredulity about his own share price, that is some sort of warning sign. But the EV story itself is not over. I notably, this early part of this week, the Spartan Acquisition Company, SPAQ, that is a SPAC, which is tickers also reads SPAC, decided to move towards, we believe, I guess, formalizing some deal with Fisker, which valued the company at close to $3 billion. That's also an electric vehicle play. We know of Fisker from many, many years ago. I think they were trying to enter the space at the high end, and they fizzled out, had a little difficulty penetrating, with the exception of Leonardo DiCaprio's purchase, I believe, which was relatively high profile back in the day. But that's some random trivia that we don't necessarily need to go down and dig into. But I have privately...
You had to get the celebrity.
I had to get the celebrity tilt in there.
Leo DiCaprio this week, okay.
Right. And, you know, I privately opined publicly that SPAC missed an opportunity, that SPAQ. I'm waiting for the SPAC bubble to burst, and maybe there will be a SPAC whose sole responsibility as a special acquisition company is to buy SPACs or to buy SPAC-related companies.
Right. A SPAC of SPACs.
A SPAC of SPACs. That's just
it's
my
like
own
a coffee private. Table book about coffee tables.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's my story.
Yikes. Yeah, Tesla, by the way, their stock is up 5x this year, five times. And and it wasn't just that report, which was widely ridiculed on Twitter, by the way. But then also last night, which was not widely ridiculed on Twitter for some reason, Credit Suisse also doubled their price target for Tesla. So yeah, 1400. Oh, wait, hang on. That's not double.
And I think, I mean, we can look at actually the real reason as to why some of these analysts are doing it. They're not, you can argue that some of them are trying to catch up to the price, right? Piper Sandler's price target before was something like 900. So they were well behind the curve.
Yeah.
You know, you could argue that was only just in June, but they're talking about the FSD. This is their fully automotive driving technology, which is supposed to be a subscription program. And notably in that note, they described that if Tesla sold their cars at below cost, the subscription plan to this technology itself would boost their operating margin well into the double digits, which is something that traditional automakers, I don't believe, can ever really compete with in order to perform. So It's not all fluff. So, you know, even though I may have called the top here accidentally, there could be more room to run.
Yeah. And actually, sorry to update, Credit Suisse, their blue sky scenario is 2,300 for Tesla. So right kind of near Piper's.
Yep.
Cool. Stephen, what about you?
One of my favorite Seeking Alpha authors is a fellow named Thomas Lott, and he had an item out yesterday, I believe. A vaccine is coming. time to sell tech stocks at bubble valuations and buy recovery value names.
Dude, you stole my idea. I was going to do the same article. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh. It must have been a really good article.
Yeah, it really was.
Lots always worth reading, you know, whether you agree with him or not. But he's kind of looking out to February 2001, and he figures by that point we're either going to have a workable vaccine or at the rate we're going now, everyone who's going to get infected with this thing is going to be infected. And he notes that tech stocks, the NASDAQ is selling at really high valuations, while the NASDAQ's up nearly 20% this year, while the S&P Value Index is down about 30% this year, and the Value Index trades at about 9x earnings. And he suggests, you know, don't wait for the news, but before the news hits, start rotating into the, some of those names.
Yeah, and that might be, and this published, I think this actually published last night. So it may have been prescient ahead of today's move. Maybe, we'll see. All right, Aaron, what about you?
So by far the most popular in terms of page view story this week on Seeking Alpha was by the European View, entitled "The Coming Stock Market Crash, Smart Money is Already Ringing the Death Bell." And I point this out not as an endorsement of the call, but just again as a you know, gauge of the sentiment of our readership, at least. There's still a lot of disbelief in this rally, or at least a fear that, you know, it's not that the rally is going to peter out, but that the bottom's going to come out and fall out of the market again, right? And we're all primed for extremes right now, which probably, you know, maybe that means the market stays in a trading range or just goes sideways for a while, and frustrates people because there, you know, again, there are a lot of people looking for, you know, a blow off top in the NASDAQ. At least we heard chatter about that before this week, or, you know, again, a return, you know, retest of the March lows and, you know, plumbing below that. So again, a sentiment gauge there. And then two stories, and you know, this is what's great about Seeking Alpha. This is what makes a market. AT&T, "Its Day of Reckoning is Coming" by Daniel Jones. And then on the flip side, Mauro Solis, and I apologize for mispronouncing her name, AT&T, "Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it." Both previewing AT&T's earnings on the 23rd with very different points of view, one very bearish, "A Day of Reckoning," and one very bullish. You know, talking about 5G and HBO Max. So, you know, again, AT&T, you know, classic big cap stock that, you know, a lot of Seeking Alpha readers care about and are interested in. And so there's two points of view on it for those who want to, you know, set themselves up ahead of earnings next week. And then the final one, Bill Maher, this just came out this morning, basically saying, you know, Netflix buy the dip after their earnings, that, you know, again, this is an overreaction. As I think Steve said earlier, the stock, you know, up 60%+ this year. So a little sell off after the results, which were certainly not terrible by any stretch. They said the growth rate is slowing, which is probably not a shock. So Bill Maher saying, you know, use this opportunity if you've been looking for a chance to get into Netflix.
Yeah, AT&T has been an interesting stock. It's one of those that has strangely gone nowhere since March. Right. It was having a good year. And I think last year, maybe even been the year before, Elliott Management, Paul Singer's hedge fund, engaged them in an activist campaign. And when that was announced, the stock rallied quite a bit. But they were previously dealing with the Time Warner acquisition and all the debt that had acquired. But yeah, but since March, it's been kind of range bound and right around $30 a share. So we'll see if these earnings, which I guess are late next week.
The 23rd, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll change any of that.
Well, it looks like, I mean, Elliott has turned its attention to the towers, right? I think that's been his main focus just recently.
Yeah, he seems to have, right.
So he's kind of playing on that same theme. But just to circle back to Steve's article on the anticipation of a cure or where we're moving in this market, because I think on the show and in financial media largely, we've all been discussing the disconnect between the market and the economy and whether they should be even connected at all. And an interesting voice, Bill Miller of Miller Value Partners, just last week was discussing that in a podcast and went on to mention that there is no correlation between the market and the economy. If you go back, I think more than 50 years, the correlation ratio is something like 0.2 in terms of the economic performance and the market. The market is a future gauge. And if you go back through March and the rebound, we can see that the market was properly anticipating Fed support, economic support, via, you know, direct payments with via the CARES Act, PPP. And I think that there's still properly, you know, the market broadly potentially pricing in even more aid at the end of July. I think that's a big key for us to watch, you know, in the next couple of weeks, is if this aid doesn't come through, we could see the market start pricing in an economic decline, and then we might see that sell-off. But we can't always assume that the economy and the market are moving hand in hand. And I think that the news earlier this week with Moderna publishing its full phase one results, which is a huge part of the lift earlier in the week, we got to closely watch that. The Oxford study and AstraZeneca's coordination is also huge. They're going to have a publication of their results in The Lancet, I believe, Monday, this coming Monday. So those are all things that we need to watch. And if those vaccines, Moderna's of which prompted 100% antibody response, I think, in all of their participants, if we'd start getting that, those bullish readouts, then, you know, the market has been right this whole time. And all those prognosticators, potentially us included, you know, wringing their hands and shouting at the market for being so overbought, you know, might have a reckoning of their own.
Could be. It's an interesting point there by Bill Miller. If you look historically, if I'm not mistaken, the best years for the stock market, I guess the S&P, were actually in the 1930s at the height of the Great Depression. So it really does speak to this disconnect. And more recently, like the low in 2009 was March 2009. Like what specifically happened economically in March 2009? I don't think anything. It was just the market, for whatever reason, decided that it, you know, it was time to maybe buy again a little bit. And then more recently, I think the best decade as a decade was the 2010s. And was that really a great decade for the economy? I don't know. Maybe not. But so interesting point there.
You know, to Brad's point about, you know, the vaccine news, there was also, well, you know, Pfizer and J&J also had some good news this week, which is obviously great from a, you know, for humanity. Just the one caution I would say, you know, the market typically tops when all the news is good, right? So if the market is pricing in, you know, more, you know, fiscal support and a vaccine, you know, when we get those things, assuming we do, you know, is that going to be, you know, a trigger for a sell-off as opposed to, you know, the seemingly logical thing that would happen, which is, oh, now it's safe. You know, it's like people are anticipating this stuff. Right. Yeah, there's going to be
When it's safe, it's too late.
Right. Yeah. And one of the analysts on that Moderna development earlier this week, one of the analysts did say that, look, the company doesn't really have any real approved drug at the moment, and its $20+ billion valuation prices in phase three success. So we're already in phase one. We're not getting phase two readouts, I think, until at least the end of this month. We're not going to get the phase three until the fall. So, and he estimated that would, you know, it's all priced in at this point. So there we have it.
Yeah, that's really a good point, but just how forward looking some of this stuff has been. My concern with this, with these vaccines, are first of all that they may not be effective even once they are approved. If you look at the flu vaccines, I know COVID is not the flu, but, and then second of all, you need a lot of people to take them.
Right.
And I believe there are some people, especially in this country, who do not like to take vaccines and in fact refuse to take them. So
it won't be a binary event. It will be over time. Right.
I guess. Yeah. But anyway, so that's just an interesting thing. But it speaks to all the liquidity that's out there, all the Fed created liquidity, you know, all the buyers that I guess were still on the sidelines looking to put money to work, right? All right, well, that's a good place to wrap up. Thank you all for watching, and we look forward to speaking to you again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.